Hi, this is John Stone from 10,000 Blades, and you're listening to WNHHLP 103.5 FM, streaming live at newhavenindependent.org. All the best of food and drink, a glass of wine, a smile, a wink. Don't have a cow, don't make a stink, it's Lucy in the kitchen sink. Best of food and drink, a glass of wine, a smile, a wink. Don't have a cow, don't make a stink, it's Lucy in the kitchen sink.
Hey, New Haveners, and welcome back to another episode of Kitchen Sink. Actually, the first episode of 2018. Today, I am very excited to be back in the studio and over the phone with artist and student and just magical human being of many talents, Jules Larson. Jules had a show last year at Shake Shack and a show before that, I believe, at Coffee Catering, and is returning to Coffee on Audubon next week for another show. So, Jules, I'm going to bring you in. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm staying inside for the cold.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know you just moved too, so you're probably running a bunch of errands. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. So I want to talk about this wonderful confluence of art, like visual art and painting, and food establishments that has popped up in your work. And maybe it's a little bit happenstance, But that's sort of how I think of your work now. and I want to talk about, you know, the work itself and some of your artistic influences as well. But first of all, let's jump right in and talk about this show that's coming up on January 12th at Coffee on Audubon Street in New Haven.
Yeah, so there's going to be a small opening, much smaller than the last one I had at Shake Shack, which proved to be pretty successful. Over at Coffee on Audubon, it will be my third show there since I've been showing there at 18. I'll be showing five pieces, four pieces from Shake Shack and one new one that I've been working on. So it'll be part of the 2018 series for the new one, and hopefully I can keep going while that one's up. So it'll be on Friday, and it's January 12th. Be at 7 p.m. And if you want to come through, there's going to be snacks and wine.
That sounds fabulous. And let's back up a little bit. So how did you start showing your work at Coffee? I love sort of unconventional gallery spaces that crop up in New Haven. And we're seeing them more and more, not just in New Haven, also in New York and across the country. We're seeing them more and more at bars, at restaurants, at coffee shops that have said, you know, we're not willing to do the sort of bad art, good walls thing that that for a long time, I think people have been accustomed to. We're actually going to bring local independent artists in, and that's going to be part of our aesthetic and sort of our mission. So when did you first, you know, either approach Coffee or Coffee approached you about doing art at Coffee, you know, having exhibitions at Coffee?
Yeah. Well, I was quite an adamant regular at Coffee when I was a kid.
Okay.
I was going to Educational Center for the Arts, which is right there on Audubon. It's a very good school, and I went there for 4 years in visual art. And every break, if you would have some major project, major undertaking that you had, you'd be running over to Coffee to try to refuel. And I got to know the regulars pretty well. They always played music I liked. And eventually, my art started coming up, and they were like, you should do a show here. They're very sort of informal about how they want, you know, artists to start showcasing themselves, whatever age they are. So I was about 17, and I was just about to be graduating from Educational Center for the Arts, and I thought it was a great finale towards the end to be like, yeah, I can do a show now, and people want to support me.
And so you were born and raised in New Haven, and I know that I think you described it at one time as living in almost every neighborhood in the city, which is quite a feat, actually. Yes. And
yeah.
And so I think within that, you know, when the chance came for you to move out of the role of student, you know, student artist, and into the role of someone who was having their own exhibition, did that feel like a sort of exciting transition for you?
Well, for the transition, short answer, yes. But it's exciting because for a short while after that show, I didn't do another show for 4 years.
Oh, wow.
And I was really trying to self-searching and traveling across the country a lot. New Haven has this aspect to it where it can be sort of a vortex, but that's also a love-hate sort of relationship, you know?
Yeah.
In the fact that you get to know all these different neighborhoods and they all have different moves and they all have different vibes. I'm living in the Hill now. I really loved living in Fairhaven. I liked living in the East Rock. I liked living in New Hallville. All those places, I think, like, influenced me and started making me think about how we needed to have art be showcased more often in non-traditional spaces, because that's most of what New Haven is. It's mostly a place that you have to go to very specific places to find the art, and then you go back home and there's no art around you.
And so
for me, I came back to art after that, you know, after realizing those things and wanting to do more community arts projects and do things in a collaborative way. And I'm sort of making this full 360 now where I want to start, you know, making my work again with all of that knowledge and with all that experience.
Oh, my gosh. I feel like you just gave me so much to unpack. So we're going to go in the Wayback Machine. Tell me and tell our listeners a little bit about the work that you were producing when you were a student at UCA.
So the work I was producing was more concept-based. I was thinking a lot about politics and whatnot and planetary systems, and I think it was sort of a surreal experience. It wasn't until there was this teacher who's a lovely painter, and you'll see him around, Zachary Keating. He really inspired me to start pursuing abstract work as sort of a form of confession. And for me, I would start around that time, the point where I really thought, you know, I'm really doing it, was when I started just going headlong into the abstract work. It's funny, too, because during that time, right beforehand, I was like, I have no idea why people do abstract work. I don't get it. It's not from anything. Like, what is the point? And as soon as you're in it, you're like, I'm the point. I want to, you know, pursue this thought, and I want to pursue these movements and pursue all these things that you can't do with reality around you. So,
well, and I know that sometimes people have said there's this very age specific thing that happens with confession and some form of confession. So I remember being told, oh, maybe you're reading Anne Sexton now, but you'll get over it. Or maybe you're looking at the photographer Nan Golden now, but you'll get over it. It's just a phase. It's like being into the Titanic or being into, you know, Egypt when you're a kid or something like that.
Right.
But for you, what sort of what was in it? What was in this form of confession that was so compelling or compelling enough to really stick with it and explore it in within the medium of painting?
Well, for me, I mean, I feel like I had a very fluid sort of relationship to where I was living. I moved around a lot. I've moved around about 45 times in my life, throughout Connecticut and all these places. I actually came to New Haven when I was about 10. So I wasn't born here, but, you know, it feels like that when you get here. But after being pretty much raised from beginning to end, like most of my teenage years and all of that, you know, I had this major effect on me that I wanted to be able to explain, but I can't really explain that kind of feeling, like not knowing what school you're going to be in the next year, not knowing all these things, and what kind of effect that has when, you know, you have split parents and there's just all these feelings that have their own set of conflicts with just explaining them. And I feel like abstract art is the only thing for me that I've been able to get just as incisive as I want to be. and just as specific as I want to be. Because when I lay it out on paper, lay it out on like writing or anything like that, it plays out in, I can't even imagine, like some kind of like Philip K. Dick novel or something. Well, it's very much something where it's like, is this actually real? Or is this something that, you know, is definitely like hyperbole, like a false hyperbole or something.
And I know from having previous conversations with you that there was a very specific moment that you had with abstract art. And so I'm wondering if you can share that with our listeners. I'm thinking of, you know, you being in New York and seeing a certain work.
Yeah. I mean, for me, seeing a lot of public art in New Haven, whether it be, you know, commissioned contract work, some kind of patronage for the city, some kind of commission work from a nonprofit, to be able to like beautify an area, or just graffiti. All of those things were images that I'm constantly and consistently seeing. I spent very, very little time in a gallery sort of setting or world. And when I went to New York, it was the same exact way. Every coffee shop I was going to, all these different places like Brooklyn, where it's just completely covered in art all over. That was my experience, my consistent experience with art, not in galleries.
Yeah. And were there, you know, along the way, as you're becoming more abstract and really committing to this practice, who were the people who were inspiring you? I should say the artists who were inspiring you.
Well, I mean, the greats were definitely inspiring, like the masters, but then there was William de Kooning, there was Wassily Kandinsky, there was, the Motherwell as well. There's a lot of op art artists that I did look to, just because they were very, it definitely was very cerebral of an experience and like very forceful. But then at the same time, there was a lot of really good graffiti artists that are around that were doing a lot of work actually from the city, where they would have like these funded projects. Like Pacer and Muck and Dulio and all these people. They're amazing people. And I think that they affected me more than anything because I got to get to know them and literally watch them work and the way that they work. So for me, that was much more effective in how I was thinking about the process and thinking about like how art is made rather than this sort of finished product on a flat white wall.
Yeah. And so the show, which in fact was on flat, I don't know if the walls at Coffee are white, which is really bad because I work on Audubon Street, but they're definitely flat. So this show, did you sort of have a moment afterwards where you thought, okay, I'm gonna maybe do something a little bit different?
Yeah. Well, I think that since such a short time at Coffee, it's only about a month, I really wanted to move the paintings from Shake Shack after 4 months of being there, which is a remarkably long time for hanging your stuff, from one space to another. It's much more tight and people are much more intimate with the work than at Shake Shack, for instance, where you can go 20 feet away from them.
Right.
And I think that it is a part of me going full circle doing a show there because, I've been there since I was a little kid, since I was 13. So this is sort of like me coming back to everything. So,
and that's actually really interesting to me. So I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about your relationship with the physical works. I always find this really interesting when I'm talking to artists because, of course, they're so close to something that there's almost like, you're almost like tied at the umbilical cord to your works when you are, when you haven't finished them, and then they go up on the walls and they belong to someone else's visual consumption all of a sudden. And so for you, is that in and of itself another thing that you've sort of been getting used to in these different exhibition spaces?
Yeah. Somebody said to me that I talk about my paintings like I'm talking about a painting that I'm, or a selfie that I'm very vain about.
Oh, like, interesting.
Like this, I never used to do selfies. And I very rarely used to, you know, put like work up onto walls. And it's very much something where I was like, is this vanity? Is this like a feeling of vanity that I'm having, or jealousy that others have no kind of nervousness about this? Because you're really just sticking your heart out there. And I think, like, as much as people are becoming much more sensitive these days and really trying to make sure that everyone has a voice, it's still revolutionary to be vulnerable in so many spaces all the time. Mm. And that's what I've been doing for years. And, you know, when you finally get used to being vulnerable all the time and being like actively honest with people, the whole feeling of showing your work is different. Same thing with selfies.
So I want to remind listeners, if you're just joining us or if you've been hanging out with us here at WNHH Community Radio, this is Kitchen Sink on WNHHLP 103.5 FM New Haven. I'm your host, Lucy Gelman, and today I'm here with Jules Larson, who is joining me over the phone. She is an artist, student, avid water drinker, person of many talents in New Haven. And we're talking about an upcoming show that she will be having starting next Friday at 7 p.m. at Coffee with a K and a question mark on Audubon Street. So, Jules, actually, talking about that sort of the process of opening oneself up to vulnerability is exciting to me. But I also so wonder about, you know, do you think about your viewers, or do you spend time sort of wondering how they are interpreting the works? Because I'm sure that, especially if these are very personal and very confessional for you, and you just finished the series 2017 and are starting on a new series 2018, named aptly after the year we just had and the year that we're beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just didn't want to give any spoilers.
You know, do viewers come up to you and say, what am I supposed to get from this piece? Do they say, here's what I'm getting, is that correct? Or do you just let them do their thing?
A little bit of both. I mean, there are definitely people that come up and ask, like, okay, so where is this coming from? Hmm. And I never feel ready to answer it. For me, I think about the audience a lot, but when they approach me, or somebody particularly approaches me, even a friend, I'm just like, feel it. Just feel it. Take a look at it. You're supposed to enjoy it. You're not supposed to feel intimidated by it. And I think, like, for me, when people come up to me, they feel intimidated in how they're understanding the painting.
Oh, wow.
Or how they're trying to evaluate the painting. They might have curiosity to them, you know, but there's this sense of hesitance in their voice, a stutter in their questions, because, you know, there's always this level of elitism, I think, that, you know, it's just sort of a thin film over the art world that I want to erase. I think that, you know, doesn't help anybody.
And how are you clawing through that sort of in your practice? Because I agree, and I think being so close to New York, which is a very specific art scene, you do get that sense of elitism. And within New Haven, there's also a very weird town-gown divide that definitely comes through when people have exhibitions in unconventional spaces. And so how are you working through that and saying, you know, this is not what I'm about. This is not what I'm interested in.
Well, I think for me, like, when I have these openings, I just want people to hang out. I want people to talk. I like the idea of being somebody that's sort of a casual host in a place where a lot of people that I know probably haven't ever met each other, and there's a chance that they're talking, and that there's a chance that some kind of community is happening. Like, I don't know if the listeners and you remember People's Arts Collective, but I very much miss that place because of the fact that it was a place where culture was being built. And nowadays you have a lot of these art events as sort of the last vestige of places where art and the people that enjoy that art are really trying to collect themselves, you know, contact each other, network with each other, or just, you know, chill because it's been a long year, and a long year of grant writing, or a long year of knocking on doors, canvassing for this or that person, or, you know, a long day at the shop as a coffee, like, maker, barista. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think people come from all these different places, and it's one of those things where I really hoped that people, you know, put that all either at the door or they bring it in and try to share it. So.
And do you think, you know, I can't help but be reminded of Laura Marsh and Phil Lickwey, who had the collective No Pop until they left last year, I guess 2 years ago in October, because they didn't feel that New Haven was a sustainable place for artists. Both of them were from, so Phil was from here. Laura had attended the MFA program at Yale. And ultimately, they felt like it was too much of a gig economy, that artists were working too hard for too little money, and that there really was no, like, physical gathering space. And so for you, you know, how does New Haven sustain that? What does that look like?
I think the funding's there, honestly. I mean, I think that there is, I mean, when you see Arts and Ideas, as much as it's a wonderful thing, and there's a lot of international works, events, musicians that are coming through, that's a lot of money. I mean, I think we could talk about how much money is being put into that and how much maybe our budget would be able to work with that without really diminishing that event. And at the same time, there's just a lot of funding coming from the city that are trying to uplift youth. And I know, as somebody who was a youth and just about to be not a youth, I don't know, like that, I would really appreciate it if there was more art, or Thais Kaffar, who's going out and really mentoring youth and like talking about, you know, racial politics, like in many different stages that used to be like super uncomfortable to talk about. And now he's doing it with art at the same time. And he's got a piece in a freaking museum. It's awesome.
Yeah.
So I think there's definitely a lot of positive things that are happening, and I would like to ride that wave. I think that if we don't get really careful over the next couple of years, especially with budgeting happening in Connecticut, just all around for how we're budgeting things, I think that there can be funding for art and for new art centers, all these things. I don't completely disagree that people are struggling. Like, I'm working at a coffee shop. Of course, I love my job because I have a good boss, I have a good place, I'm next to film all the time at Best Video. You know, that's a good thing, but at the same time, I would love to be, you know, having a career as an artist.
So. Yeah. Well, and I do think it's, so Helen Cotter of ArtSpace was talking at some event last year and said, you know, increasingly artists are cobblers and writers are cobblers. You cobble together a profession and you like barely make it. And so within that, and I know that you are someone who has talked about sort of art within a nexus of a bunch of other things. So I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about that.
In terms of community?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I think art is an amazing vehicle and sort of a universal tool for something I like to call cultural justice. There's a lot of ways in which I think culture has been siphoned from New Haven's conversation, just for, you know, more talks of economic development, more talks of being able to make sure that, you know, Yale has its property and that there's, you know, good parking, good transportation. That's all wonderful. But at the same time, we have to think creatively. And I think if we don't have a culture that's thinking creatively, there's just going to be so many things that we're going to copy from other cities and think it's going to work here.
Yeah.
So for me, I think it's very important that art is brought up to the front because of the fact that it's not just a great conversation piece. I think it's passion and it's all the reasons we're alive, you know?
So
I think that.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, please. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's it. That's it.
So I think that's actually a really good point to kind of take a couple steps back and talk about a show that you had last year at Shake Shack, which is not generally where I'm expecting to see works of art.
Yeah.
So this was part of it's the Art 21 project, right?
Art 25.
Art
yeah.
25. I was missing
yeah.
four. And but it's Art 25 is dedicated to putting art in unconventional spaces. So your bank, boom,
yeah.
you've got art. Your restaurant, boom, you've got art. But I was like just so tickled to see you very comfortable in Shake Shack. And so I'm actually wondering if you could talk about the confluence of art and food and, you know, if that's been something in your own life.
I mean, I always love to, I mean, the full confession, this is confession day. I mean, I loved going to art shows because sometimes I would forget to eat and I'd be like, oh yeah, there's cheese and crackers there and there's wine there. But at Shake Shack, I specifically asked because I was at Shake Shack and I had never had their cheese fries before that I was going to have cheese fries at my art show. And there's going to be wine and there's going to be cheese fries instead of brie. No, they're going to have cheese fries, steaming hot cheese fries. And that, has elevated, art shows from here on out. Like that needs to be the thing.
Okay. So tell me a little more about that. I mean, I am genuinely interested as someone who likes food and writes about food and thinks about food a lot. I'm genuinely interested in the idea of, you know, you gather around a plate of cheese fries and then what's the discussion when you have a very abstracted work in front of you?
I mean, is it a postmodern mess? I don't know. But I think there is definitely just something about having a more informal food around you. Not having these like extremely expensive things that I know that many artists have pooled together money throughout their month to be able to give to their guests for free. It was very nice of Shake Shack to be able to provide all that for free, you know? But at the same time, you know, I think that, yeah, it'd be great if like we started thinking about artists and their art and what they're doing, what kind of money they're spending on like this food. And I really want to make sure that we have like sustainable food around us. You know, it'd be great if there was sustainable cheese on those sustainable fries, you know, that'd be great. Coming from the garden where the potatoes were growing, like right there on Lombard Street or something. That would be great. And I think that, the more local it gets, the better.
And as, you know, as someone who is in the food industry, too, do you find that that sort of affects how you're thinking about your work at all? You know, when you come home from a long work day, are you more likely to make work because it's something that so completely breaks up that space? Are you less likely to make work? You're also a student, so you're doing a lot of things at once.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely like a moment when I'm painting that I fall into this kind of singularity. I think about like just one or two things throughout my life. And I kind of force myself to keep thinking that almost in a kind of meditation. But that isn't always something super serious. Like there's been times where I've painted just because I was thinking about garlic bread that entire day. And I was just like, oh my God, I would love some garlic bread.
Wait,
but
do
you know
paint,
what? I got to paint.
Do you paint garlic bread?
Or no, I do not.
Oh, you
paint
think about,
bread.
Okay, you meditate on garlic bread and you paint. I mean, this is genuinely interesting to me.
I think about it a lot. I love food. Food has become like very much part of my persona, I guess. A lot of people know me as somebody that really loves pickles and garlic bread and drinking water. So, which I ship all of those things. So
yeah. So tell me, but in all seriousness, you know, tell me a little bit more about that because I think there is this connection, but maybe with garlic bread, maybe not, but definitely with pickles. There's this connection of getting back to sort of these practices that were very sort of old school. Yeah, I don't even want to say old school, but for instance, fermentation, people are getting way back into it. So pickles and kimchi, and I know that you do kimchi as well. You know, and homemade goods. And I think there people take comfort in that in this time of just social media saturation or oversaturation.
So
I'm interested in when that, you know, have you always done that or did that become a thing at some point recently?
I did. I learned a couple things about kimchi and about making kombucha and making pickles from People's Arts Collective, actually. So that was years ago. But for me, like, I'm in the process of transitioning with, like, hormones and everything. And it's made me feel very introspective and, like, want to be more patient with things and I put a lot more focus into cooking and slow cooking things and slow doing something and really taking my time with it. And what's more, you know, slow and taking your time with something than like fermenting something for days and doing something for days and watching it change. I think that it was really great for me because now I can make my own pickles, I can make my own kimchi, my own kombucha, all these different things that, you know, I guess it gets part of that DIY culture that's definitely been happening. But for me, it's also all of those things are getting exceedingly more expensive. So, you know, it's definitely, I'm definitely spending 5% to 10% of what you would spend to actually get the finished product at a store. So,
well, and I want to come back to the conversation about transitioning and whether or not that is something that factors into your work. But I love this idea of patience. And do you find that patience is also affecting the series 2018 that you're working on now?
Yeah, I think so. I've definitely slowed down a bit. You know, I've just like, I've been taking my time. Every time the winter hits, I think it's a certain kind of effect for all New Havenites that you want to, you know, take a second and look back at everything that you did that year. It's cold, you're staying inside, you're finishing all of your writings, you're finishing all your paintings. And I think that it's sort of a spiritual time for me. So I think that with that, you know, I want to stay inside and I want to do something where I'm watching a natural progression every day. And for somebody that, you know, has dealt with depression and anxiety, these things like keep me present. They really keep me present because you're just consistently seeing progress each day in the things that you create. And that seems so like, you know, kind of cliche or cheeky or whatever, but I think that it's great when I'm like right there watching something change, you feel something different. So.
And do you think it's an intentional patience? So kind of saying, I need to slow down. I have personal resolve to slow down.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely like that.
So I want to hear about the show at Coffee, and I want to talk about the show at Coffee. But before that, I do want to go back to something that you and I have spoken about before, which is identity politics. Right now, I think they're very hot in the art world, and I mean that sort of broadly, so fine in performing arts. But you have been fairly outspoken that you are not all about identity politics. And I think it's something that is worth sort of worth talking about in this moment when maybe other artists gravitate towards it. So I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about that.
Well, just to start off and maybe keep people from thinking of a red flag when it comes to identity politics, I do think that identity politics have like, you know, its merit. I understand why people are going for it. But for me, as somebody that, you know, has this sort of hyper-marginalized identity, I'm supposed to go out there and really, really speak on trans issues and speak on all these things. But the thing that really gets me when I do talk about these things is that I'm sort of considered a monolith. I'm considered this like, I am the end-all be-all of what it means to be trans and all this stuff. And to my other, you know, trans friends, of course, they don't like think that. But for somebody that is like only friends with me and that's the only trans person they know, that's what happens. And for me, like, I think about that with identity politics is like we have this kind of ladder and this setup of how these identities are supposed to be something where because of that experience, they can speak very, very, very authoritatively on something. And of course, yes, they can speak on those experiences, but it has this really toxic feel to it when, you know, you're going to see every single identity go all the way to the tippy top of office, and it's going to happen.
Yeah.
I think when it comes down to it, there is going to be a moment in our lives where we're going to see a white trans woman as a senator making sure that police brutality continues. I mean, there's going to be so many things that identity politics can't talk about. And for me, I would like for that kind of conversation to just expand. I think like when it comes to, I don't want to get too political, but when it comes to like, you know, Trump and a lot of these things, we feel that we need to lower our standards. I think it's the exact opposite. We need to heighten our standards from looking at things so simply, because obviously if it was that simple, we'd figure it out. So.
And when you say we, are you talking about the artistic community, the LGBTQ community, the New Haven community more broadly?
I think, like all of that. I mean, in terms of New Haven, I think it's very much, it's a very either leftist or very sort of liberal town. And I think that it's generally been that way for a long time. And for me, talking about identity politics usually ends up becoming something where a lot of people are going to quote unquote police you and really make sure that you're saying the right thing the right way and all these things. And I understand that, you know, because it can hurt, and a lot of things can hurt if somebody is like really ignorant about something. But also at the same time, there's definitely a huge divide in terms of education and knowledge about all of these identities and all of these things. I mean, if that were the case, for instance, and I mean no offense to, you know, Yaleys and Yale students, but they have a lot more access to that. Does that mean that they are better at identity politics than somebody living in Newhallville or me living in the Hill? Like, does that mean that we run a completely different world here?
Yeah.
Just because people don't have access to that knowledge? I think that it sort of flies in the face of how New Haven is working. It needs to be a little bit more real with each other and a little bit more direct with each other about how we've created a lot of inaccessible language with identity politics. And it's made it really hard for us to think of us as like a working people or a people that needs to organize together as like, you know, somebody of the same class or somebody of the same race. I mean, even that, it's just become this thing where we're infinitely policing each other. And I think it just takes away from art. There's so many things where I think if somebody is talking about their identity and talking about their work in their thing, that's their deal. That's the thing that they want to do. I talk about my trans issues in the way that I want to talk about them, you know? And I think that shouldn't be something where it's like, oh God, they're talking about identity politics. Like, no, obviously they're talking about a very nuanced and complex experience of how they understand that. They're not just talking about, you know, what it means to be X, you know.
As someone, I mean, it's interesting as you say this to me. So as someone who's been in nonprofits and who has been in politics and political organizing in the state of Connecticut and in New Haven, do you also find those boundaries a little bit permeable? So, okay, maybe art isn't inherently political, but is it a space where political discussion might happen and might take place? And is that productive?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it's really productive and like, I would love to make art spaces very political. I think that it would, I mean, if not already, the way that art is happening in New Haven, the way that you have like Bergamo's or Arte and just like a couple of places for art in Fairhaven, and then you have, you know, so many different cultural spots downtown, or you have literally nothing in Newhallville, or basically nothing in the Hill. Like, I think in all these different neighborhoods, if we were seeing more of that, you know, maybe I wouldn't be so much of a push to think of things like, oh yeah, this is political. But I think literally the way that this town is set up and where we are allowed to show art and what kind of art is respected, that's political before anybody goes into the door, like goes through the door. So
we'll talk about your sort of your newest / coming full circle venue in a minute, but I'm very curious, you know, is there an ideal venue for you or that you think artists should be taking advantage of in a neighborhood that maybe does not spring to mind when someone's thinking about art? As you were saying, Newhallville and the Hill, I was also thinking about the fact that West River is this wonderful and very rich community, and yet does not have a lot of physical spaces for art.
Yeah, exactly. I think every neighborhood should at least have a well-funded and independent community center. That's my idea of something where it's other things happening in the same space. where, you know, we have music happening, we have art of all kinds happening, not just, like, I think when I say visual art, a lot of people think of paintings or photography. And I always think about performance and dance and hip hop, like rap, slam poetry, all those things. I think that all matters in the same exact way. And I think they're all very cultural, so they all need to be put forward in the way that the neighborhood wants to, you know? So it would be great if I saw more. I was really happy when I heard the Q House was opening up over in Dixville, because that's going to change a lot in that area. It changed a lot when it was open, so.
Yeah, I think that's true. So I do want to, before we run out of time, I do want to talk about this upcoming show, which is on starts on January 12th at Coffee with a K and a question mark, in case there are any questions about that, on Audubon Street, which is in and of itself sort of this funky space in New Haven. So coming back there, do you feel like your work has just changed a great deal? Do you feel like it's sort of a homey space, maybe both at the same time?
It's a little bit of both. I mean, I think for me, like, when I see the painting that I just made and I see the paintings that I made a few months ago, I see very obvious markers and differences in, like, how it is. But for somebody that doesn't really have much like, knowledge of what I do or much knowledge about the art world, which is totally fine, they would see these as paintings that might have happened the same day, you know.
And, interesting.
So for me, like, I think that, you know, if you take a painting that'll probably do a year from now, I think people will notice a difference. But these are so close together. It's sort of like noticing a change in evolution, like a very subtle change in evolution. So,
and for you,
I really want to make sure it's happening. So,
For you, you know, if viewers maybe aren't seeing that, but you sense it, is that enough in your work?
I think that there's definitely going to be a point where I want people to see it, but so far it hasn't been that way.
And so I do want to go back to the food thing, too.
Go for it.
Yeah. So, but at, you know, at Coffee, do you think about it in terms of sort of a multi-sensory experience because you spent so much time there when you were a teenager? So kind of, you know, getting a cup of coffee, like you get jazzed up a little bit, recaffeinated, refueled, and then you go out and do your thing.
Yeah, it's like a busy place. I love it. I mean, I think I like putting my work in busy places where a lot of people are going through, especially where coffee is, because I love my coffee. So I think there is going to be some good foods that are there. And I think that food is really important to how a city represents itself, I think. So coffee is some really good food. And I think it's representative of New Haven. And I think there's like a lot of places that can do that. So that's why I was happy to be part of Art 25 and be part of this like project that's trying to make sure that art can be seen in many, many different places, because there's a lot of food to also show. There's a lot of culture to also show.
And if you really have a hope for the discussions that will evolve around this show, because artists often will say like, oh, I just put my work out there and then, you know, it does its thing or it speaks for itself or I let it go. And that's great, but I don't really completely believe it. For anyone, I always think there's a sentimental attachment for artists, for writers, for performers. And so, you know, if you had an ideal conversation or series of conversations evolve around this work, what would that look like?
Could you rephrase that? Sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess, like, what would your greatest hope for this exhibition be? It's a similar space. It's new work, you know, completely new work for you. And I think you have said, you know, you're in this very different brain space now.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think it's like, it definitely has a nostalgic feel to it. I would like for, a lot of people have been saying like, hey, I'm excited to come to your show, or they've missed the show at Shake Shack, so they're all coming through. There was a point at Shake Shack where I was just like, standing there, and I was either being interviewed by you or like talking to somebody, and one of my friends would come in and I'd hug them, and that would be the last time I see them until they leave, and I'd be like hugging them goodbye. And that was very overwhelming because it's like a lot of people. I would love for a lot of people to be there, but that was also something where I was just like, oh wow, like I can't really interact with anybody because it's just this massive flow of people. So I'd like for people to be a little bit more chill, stay a little bit longer, you know, enjoy the work, talk amongst yourselves. I'm of course the art that's in the room, but I like for people to not see me as the center point.
Well, and one of the things, so we've talked about your art as I think a form of self-care and a form of meditation. But one of the things you've been vocal about recently that I'm so curious about is drinking water.
Yes.
Which is also related
to drink water.
To food. So I'm wondering when when you felt compelled to hop on the water bus and be a little bit vocal about it. Because I actually don't think of it as totally separate from the other ways in which you are taking care of yourself through your art.
You need to drink like so much water. I think that's the problem right now is like, for me, I think there's a lot of ways in which my anxiety, my depression festers. It's definitely not directly contributing to it, but it definitely festers if I don't drink enough water. It really helps. It, like the hydration and everything. And I try to remind people because I care and love my friends, and I really want to make sure that they're okay, especially since many people don't know that you get dehydrated in the cold. Mm-hmm. Everybody thinks they get dehydrated in the hot weather. So there's more people right now that are probably getting dehydrated right now because they don't think that they need to drink water in the cold. And I'm very direct about that because I don't think anybody's drinking enough water. So
if you're just joining us, we're actually just winding down. I'm Lucy Gelman. This is Kitchen Sink on WNHHLP 103.5 FM New Haven. I've been talking to artist Jules Larson about an upcoming show at Coffee with a K and a question mark on Audubon Street on January 12th, starting at 7 p.m. Jules, if people want to find you and they want to find out more about your art, how can they do that?
You can check my website. It's JulesLarson.com. I just now started working on it, so it's definitely in its sort of fetal phase right now. But there's also my Facebook page as well, so you can always check that out. I'm going to check real quick, actually, to make sure that I have the right URL. yeah, it's Jules Larson Art.
Amazing.
Jules Larson Art. That's my Facebook page. And you can see all the work and the events that I'm doing.
Great. Well, I want to thank you so much. This has been Kitchen Sink on WNHHLP 103.5 FM New Haven. If you missed the episode, I'm so sorry, but there are lots of ways you can catch us. You can find WNHH Community Radio on SoundCloud or Facebook, or on Twitter at WNHHLP. You can also find this episode and all episodes of Kitchen Sink at Kitchen Sink with Lucy Gelman on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts, and it is completely free. So thank you so much for listening, and as always, happy eating.
Thank you.
When I'm cold and hungry, would you turn me away? And if I had no money, would you beg me to stay? Please tell me what you seek. Please know that I am weak. There's nothing but the sky above. Hidden and I've forgotten my own name.